Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Jim Garrity out this week. And today, Dan Foster of NationalReview.com is with us. And Daniel, it's great to have you with us. And as Jim and I have noticed over the past several weeks, good news is a little bit like pulling teeth. And so some days it's actual good news. Some days it's just the best we could find. And unfortunately, today is a little bit in the latter category. John McCain is actually the good martini today, which should give you some indication of where we stand on the caliber of and the quality of the news over the last few days. And he was on CNN's State of the Union with Candy Crowley. And McCain was asked whether or not Al-Qaeda is basically running the show for the Libyan opposition. McCain spent part of his Easter recess meeting with the Libyan rebels. And here's what he had to say to that question.
Now, if you have a stalemate, I think it's very possible that Al-Qaeda could come in and take advantage of a stalemated situation. But right now, it's not Al-Qaeda that motivated this, and it's not Al-Qaeda that's running it.
Now, despite what John McCain says, I still have quite a few misgivings about who exactly we're helping over there. I think the best part of this martini today is that at least John McCain still cares about this. I don't think Obama said a word publicly about this since that quasi-primetime speech a number of days after he ordered the action through the UN Security Council and was all too eager to hand it officially off to NATO, even though that really didn't change a whole lot. But it seems like everyone else has pretty much forgotten about it, so at least McCain realizes we are in a third war or kinetic military action, depending on the terminology you want to use.
Right, Greg. I think it's clear that President Obama's heart is not in this, as you put it, kinetic military action. And at the same time, it is good news, I suppose, that Senator McCain has gone over there and seen firsthand in, I guess, the 48 hours he was there, he determined once and for all that Al-Qaeda is not a part of this of this rebellion. And, you know, we have to give the senator a lot of credit for being right on the surge and being right about Iraq when very few other people were. So I give him the benefit of that on this thing. I, of course, don't question his commitment to freedom abroad, but I share your concerns about who comprises this rebellion, and I don't think the senator, by spending a couple of days in Benghazi, has seen everything. But you're right, this is good news only on a terrible news day, right? Because McCain even told Time magazine, he described the rebellion versus the Gaddafi civil war as a fourth-rate power taking on a third-rate power. And he likened the training regime of the rebels to a high school drill. So this isn't exactly sunshine and puppies optimism, but he thinks with a little bit more American leadership, which has been lacking, and in that vacuum, NATO has shown us that it really can't do much. He thinks with a little bit more American leadership, we can have a happy outcome there, and I hope he's right.
Yeah, he's championing the Predator drone usage. Lindsey Graham wants to bomb Tripoli, and you're right. It looks like, to some extent, he got the guided tour, but the fact that he was at least able to assess the quality of the troops as not very good shows that he's a few steps ahead of Jimmy Carter observing international elections, which is a little more than a photo op. So he's a few steps ahead of that, which I guess is, again, in the current climate, enough for good news. So on to the bad news today, and I don't think that this was a huge surprise, Dan, but it's certainly not what we wanted to hear from the Supreme Court. They are not going to honor Virginia Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli's request to fast-track the constitutional challenges to Obamacare, primarily over the individual mandate requirement. What's going to certainly happen now is this is going to have to take the time to go through the appellate level before the Supreme Court ultimately decides this, which everyone knows that's where it's going anyway. So the fact that we have to wait several months for all this to play out when it's obvious that whether they fast-track it or not, the Supreme Court's going to have to decide this, kind of frustrating.
It is, and I'm usually a fan of deliberation and doing things by the regular order, but here we're fighting against the clock on at least two fronts. One is, of course, we want to get this thing adjudicated before it's implemented, and we're fighting the clock on that front. But second is the composition of the court, and it's not something people think about all the time, but of course, President Obama is going to be president for two more years at least, and the conservative wing of the court isn't getting any younger. And while at the moment I'm actually, I think, pretty bullish, more bullish than other conservatives I've talked to about this on Justice Kennedy, who's going to be, let's face it, the linchpin here. I'm pretty bullish on how he's going to view this case. But, you know, that the composition of the court isn't going to last forever. So it would have been nice to see the court take this up directly, but I'm not surprised that they didn't.
Yeah, exactly right. And you're right about the composition. Hopefully that flimsy 5-4 majority, depending on the issue, can hang on for, I guess, now at least another year. And I have to be bullish on the courts because I have no bullishness left when it comes to Congress taking this on. Under the current circumstances, certainly, I have no confidence in them doing it. They won't even take on the funding in the continuing resolution. But the idea that they could somehow get enough votes in the Senate to beat a Democratic filibuster, even in a Republican majority in the new Congress, and even if we get a Republican president, that's a lot of ifs. And so if it's going to happen, I think it's going to happen in the courts.
Every day that we march toward the full implementation of this law is a day we get farther away from the likelihood of a congressional solution, even if all those ifs do come true and we're able to take over the Senate and the White House. It's still going to be a challenge. And in this case, I think that this is a law that clearly oversteps constitutional authority of the federal government. So I'm perfectly happy with a judicial solution because that's exactly where the solution should happen when Congress exceeds its authority.
Absolutely right. Well, on to the third martini now. And it's partly crazy, but partly just sad and makes you want to sigh. President Obama devoting his weekend media address. I don't know what you call it anymore because it's not on radio, it's on YouTube, but let's call it his YouTube address, talking about rising gas prices and how this really troubles him, Dan, which comes from the same guy who says that energy prices will necessarily skyrocket back when he was a candidate back in 2007 and 2008 if his cap-and-trade approach were to work. So the president says he has three long-term approaches to making sure that folks get as much relief as possible at the pump. Number one, he says, is more supply, which comes just at the same time that the EPA has banned Shell from accessing 27 billion barrels in Alaska. So that clearly is a dubious claim at best by the president. Then here's number two. This is what he says is the second most important part of making sure that we're energy independent and the fuel prices are as low as possible.
On Thursday, my attorney general also launched a task force with just one job: rooting out cases of fraud or manipulation in the oil markets that might affect gas prices, including any illegal activity by traders and speculators.
And, of course, the oil companies are evil.
And another step we need to take is to finally end the $4 billion in taxpayer subsidies we give to the oil and gas companies each year. That's $4 billion of your money going to these companies when they're making record profits and you're paying near record prices at the pump.
Okay, Dan. First of all, I don't know if this task force is going to be as effective as all these different commissions he's appointed on the debt, but if it is, I think we're only on phase one of about three different phases to get a commission to offer some recommendations, which he won't even act on. And secondly, who does he think is going to end up paying for these subsidies the energy companies don't get if he gets his way? I'm pretty sure it's going to be us.
Yeah, I think he needs a task force to investigate the effectiveness of his task forces and commissions at this point. If President Bush was the decider, then President Obama is the delegator. And he just has never once hesitated to pass the buck on a single problem to a commission or a czar or a task force that, as you said, nothing comes from. And you're right, there are 1,000 arguments for ending subsidies to oil companies, and it is often an example of the kind of corporatism that good conservatives should disassociate themselves from. But it's a little absurd to suggest that somehow taking $4 billion off the table from oil companies is going to result in lower oil prices. And you're right, the president has made clear, he made clear when he was a candidate, that he wants higher energy prices. This isn't some conspiracy. This isn't us making stuff up. The president said in so many words that while he'd prefer a gradual increase so that consumers and the average American can absorb the increasing energy costs, he thinks it's a necessary step in moving towards this bright green, wholesome energy future for America where we don't depend on fossil fuels at all. So, he's contradicting himself when he says, "I feel your pain at the pump." And he's not doing the things he really should be doing if he were concerned about easing oil prices.
That's exactly right. And look for more demagoguery and demonization later this week as the quarterly statements from the big oil companies come out. And what you're going to see is larger revenue than normal. But look at the percentage of profit, not the overall numbers, because a lot of times the costs aren't that much less than the profits overall. So be looking at that, not just the overall numbers of the revenue that these companies raked in over the last 3 months.
Right. And this guy's, and last thing I'll say is this guy's solution to everything, whether it's our $14 trillion deficit or energy prices, is magical commissions to eliminate waste and fraud and and evildoers, right? I mean, this is how he wants to solve Medicare, waste and fraud. This is how he wants to solve high oil prices, to find these phantom speculators, and demagoguing against the rich and the productive class and the well-off and the people who, you know, create jobs and the entrepreneurs in this country. He's doing it. He's doing it in energy, just like he's doing it in, on taxes and everything else. So it's no surprise. Page one of the Obama playbook.
Yeah, not exactly a glowing and exciting beginning to the three martini lunches this week, but we deal with the hand we're dealt. Dan, thanks so much for your time. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks a lot, Greg.
Daniel Foster of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Tuesday for the next three martini lunch.